Blog Talk Radio.
Something happened to me last Thursday when I was driving home. I had a couple of miles to go. I looked up and saw a glowing orange object in the sky to the east. It was moving very irregularly. Suddenly, there was intense light all around me. When I came to it,
welcome to Strange Rounds to Your Universe. I got a great guest tonight. He's a conspiracy researcher. He contributes to a lot of different resources, Paranoia Magazine and Conspiracy HQ. He's also written for Mystery Magazine, served as an executive producer and principal researcher for Ground Zero Radio with Clive Lewis. I gotta admit, I had his book on my wish list for a long time, the Secret Space Age book, and I went back to get it, and it was discontinued, but I think that was the first print. But I was like, you know, he writes about really interesting stuff, so I really want to bring him on and talk about his great work. And I always love doing a conspiracy show. It's always fun. Further ado, here he is. Good evening, No Law.
Hey, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm glad you was able to call in tonight. I tell you what, as I was reading your bio and stuff about you, you contribute to a lot of things, and I really commend that. That's really cool, man.
Yeah, you know, I enjoy writing. I enjoy doing research. So, you know, when people come to me and they say, hey, can you write for me, you know, or you write something for me, I'm usually pretty okay with it. But I enjoy
awesome.
The research and the writing, so I just like spreading it around.
So tell us a little bit about your background, Olaf.
Sure. So, you know, I've been a conspiracy researcher and UFO researcher for a long time. I was trained, I educated in anthropology and archaeology, ethnography. So that, you know, that kind of comes into play sometimes when I'm doing the research. But I started kind of figuring this stuff out when I was about 7. I had third grade, I had a strange thing happen to me, and I couldn't really understand what it was. I ran next door to get my dad and say, hey, what's that thing hanging outside my window? It was a big ball of white hanging outside my window. And I ran and got my dad. I said, what is that? And he goes, I don't know, because there's nothing there. You know, but I saw something, and I saw it for over 30 minutes. So I decided to the next day to go do some research. So in my elementary school library, we had, you know, J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée and you know, all the classic authors, you know, so I started reading and, you know, never gave up since then, started researching, and here I am now.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah,
it definitely seems, especially in the conspiracy aspect, and it seems today, Olaf, that it's no longer a conspiracy. It's all red flags most of the time.
You know, a conspiracy implies that more than two people are keeping a secret.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that it is definitely a conspiracy in some capacity. I think you do see a lot of false flags, but remember, false flags are they're for misdirection, right?
I was saying red flags, you know, because
red flags,
because whenever it's in front of your face, it's no longer a conspiracy.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, definitely. There are tons of red flags. I mean, people are seeing stuff all over the sky all the time. And with the proliferation of cell phones, that, you know, everybody sees them and they photograph them. So now we have this amazing, you know, I was on Google News last night. I have a trigger on Google News. Everybody should do this, but I have a trigger. And when somebody reports a UFO sighting, you know, and it's in a newspaper or some sort of, you know, quasi-legit kind of news source, if there are legit.
Yeah.
but I get an email once a day that gives me a list. And I saw this article or saw this news posting about somebody saw a UFO and got a great video. In fact, I saw it on Facebook later. And it's a beautiful photograph of a triangular object flying over some guy's house. And it's gorgeous. It's a great photo or a great video. I mean, it's very clear. Shot with somebody's, you know, phone. So having multi-megapixel phone cameras has really helped quite a bit, because now we're really starting to see a lot more, you know, clarity, and we're starting to see a lot more photography and video of these objects.
You know, and with that, though, Olaf, we know really no longer have any privacy whatsoever with it, because, you know, we get a lot of UFO videos now, especially, and a lot of other stuff, you know, such as the cryptozoology and other stuff such as that. But you really don't get the, you know, the whole package deal.
Well, and also having phones that are this powerful, you know, probably 10 years ago, right, I went to Japan, and I was in Japan, and they had phones that were kind of like the phones we have now, that they were basically handheld computers, that they were not as, so I'm talking on an iPhone, fairly sophisticated device. What they had were not that sophisticated, but they were basically miniaturized computers. And one of the problems that we have today is, as we've matured our phones and become more reliant on our phones for everything that we do, the phones have become more powerful, but also that's more of a privacy problem, right? You know, for example, any iPhone or Droid phone, right, can be switched on by the carrier. And now you have, like, the perfect bug. It has an HD-grade camera. You know, it has a fantastic mic. And it can hear everybody in the room, and depending on how you lay it down, it can see you. Yeah. So, you know.
Well, there was this prism system. It was one of the documents that was leaked in some of Edward Snowden files. But see, but the prism system, it's like onto a server, so it's, you know, it picks up on keywords that you use and certain things.
Sure.
That's what they, you know, that they find. And then I was doing research that was really interesting. Microsoft first was on the Prism system. I think it was like maybe 2007, somewhere along the lines. But Apple was the last one to join, but it seemed like every and just by year, it seemed like, you know, they all slowly boomed up. We got on that Prism system. And then, you know, until that, nobody thought that it even existed. No, it was like
there were rumors. There were rumors that it existed. I mean, ultimately.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know,
most conspiracy people, you know, they still go back to Echelon, right? This notion that they're intercepting all the phone calls and, you know, they're listening to keywords. If I say nuclear bomb, then, you know, it sets off something automatically.
Oh, yeah.
And the conversation we're having has been flagged, right? Prism was more sophisticated. You know, it was a much more sophisticated thing. But, you know, what's interesting about that is that everything has a back door. Windows has a back door. You know, OS X has a back door. Everything. Skype has a back door, and Skype didn't used to. Skype used to be so secure that point-to-point communication using Skype, the guys who invented Skype used such a large key that it would have taken the NSA something like 200 years to decrypt it, right? And that was first Skype conversation. But, you know, Microsoft got it, now it's got a back door. Well, there's an operating system called FreeBSD. FreeBSD is a is a very old school Unix. It's open source. It runs many of the firewalls and security appliances on the internet that large corporations use. It's a very, very secure thing. And they know it. The guys, the people that maintain it, the men and women, they contribute to it. They're very careful because they want it to be secure and to be free and open, right? At least every year, some anonymous person that they cannot trace attempts to put in a backdoor into the operating system. Every year, at a minimum, every year, somebody contributes a chunk of code that will actually give FreeBSD a backdoor. And they strip it out every year, and every year they wait for it. But somebody, probably at Fort Meade, is giving them that chunk of code every year. So it tells you how
how it thinks about, well, who, where is it, who's getting, you know, who's, and it could be a private, some linked to some other, three-letter agency of some sort.
Yeah, it's probably a private subcontractor who's, and, you know, I was actually talking to somebody about how the secret space program works, and it works in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's probably a private subcontractor of an alphabet agency.
Yeah, I've always I really have.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, you know, and you know, with the secret space program, you know, that's the thing is, what have they found that we don't know about? And pretty much, I'm sure it's about 96% of what has been told or let out, allegedly.
Well, what I will tell you is that what I know for certainty is that when Ben Rich, and he's done this like six times, he gave the graduation address, I believe it was at Caltech, a couple years ago, and he said that not only do I have the technology for E.T. to call home, but I have the contract to take him there.
Oh, wow.
And that's Ben Rich. He's head of the Lockheed Skunk Works. He's head of the super secret division within Lockheed that builds this kind of stuff. And over the last few years, you know, well, one of the questions I always get asked is, how do they fund it, pay for this? Well, you know, you may remember about 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago now, I'm going to date myself, there was a big explosion, and everybody was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Because it turned out that these defense contractors like Lockheed and Grumman were overcharging the government for toilet seats and for hammers, right? You'd pay like $300 for a $5 hammer. I mean, I could go down the street and I could get that hammer for $5. Well, the Air Force is paying $300, right?
Like one-offs for like high-dollar stuff, simple stuff,
right.
Getting high-end.
Exactly.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And so at the time, everybody was like, well, they're just screwing the government. You know, that's what contractors do. They screw the government, right? Well,
yeah. No,
they don't, actually.
Oh, well,
they don't. Well, they do, but not that bad. So
it's only to serve their own agenda, basically.
Well, what it turns out is that they were taking the other, let's say they marked it up to 20 to $50, right? Screw them, but not too bad. The other $250 was going back into Lockheed, and it was being used in special access programs. The reason it's being used in special access programs is because those special access programs are not accountable to the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, and they are not listed as budgetary line items. See, the reason that we know about the Aurora spy plane, right, is that somebody in the late 90s put in the budget Aurora aircraft into the budget. And everybody said, oh, what's that, what's that? And over time, people were able to reconstruct, you know, that it was this high-altitude, super-fast replacement for the SR-71, right? They learned from that. They didn't want that to happen again, especially not with a space plane. You don't want anybody asking what that black triangle really is and how it works, because
cool.
I'm here to tell you. It does some interesting stuff. Well, what they did is they said, okay, Lockheed, this is a project that we want you to do. It's basically off the books. It's not accountable to the Congress. You know, it's not really even accountable to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It's an Air Force project with Lockheed, and Lockheed controls it. And then Lockheed doesn't have to report how many people are working on it, what they're doing. It just kind of gets done.
So it's all off the cuff, all of it.
Yeah, everything.
Man. See, and that's
you want to know how off the truck it is?
How much I lost?
Okay, so conventionally, right, we believe that in the 60s, that that's when we finally had the technology to go to the moon. In the mid to late 60s, or in the late 60s, we finally figured it out. NASA got it together. John F. Kennedy did his speech about, I'm going to go to the moon and do the other things, not because they're easy, because they're tough. And boom, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin land on the moon, plant the flag, hooray for America, go American exceptionalism, right? No.
Oh, yeah.
In the late 50s, the U.S. Army hatched a plan called Project Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And that plan called for, I believe it's 1961, though I could be wrong, by the book. But I think it's like 1961.
Yeah,
the Army expected to have 300 people on the moon in a battle station, like a moon base, like Moon Base freaking Alpha, right?
Oh, yeah.
The Air Force, not to be outdone, and by the way, the Army approached it like the Army, that their facility was a bunker buried into the regolith on the moon, right? The Air Force was more mobile. They hatched a plan at the same time, but by 1962, they wanted to have 100 warrior astronauts, soldier astronauts on the moon. Theirs was called Lunex. The Russians, at the same time, had the technology. They knew they had the technology. They said, we have the technology to do this, right? And theirs was called Zvezda. Now, to tell you how sophisticated it is, right, one of the things that we're taught in school is that we don't weaponize space, right? That you shouldn't put bombs and weapons in space because space is everybody's, right? Wrong.
Yeah.
The Russians built a successive group of battle stations called the Almaz, and they were various battle stations. This is before Skylab. They built the Almaz, which is various levels of Almaz, each one getting better. One even had like a 20 millimeter recoilless rifle, recoilless cannon,
mm-hmm.
and they had to put thrusters on it so that when it fired, that they could like counteract the inertia of firing it. Because, you know, it's space, right? So they'd fire it, and then the whole space station would move backwards, right? So they had to put rocket engines in to counter that. Well, not to be outdone, we built something called the MOL, the Manned Observation Laboratory, all Air Force, you know. and they claim, well, with the exception of the Almaz is 100%. You can go look it up online. You can actually see a video of a guy who talks about being stationed inside the Almaz. But the MOL and Lunex, Horizon, Zvezda, whatever, they say they didn't do it. But I don't believe them, and I don't think anybody else should either. So, I mean, there's a whole secret history. I talked to a guy once. He said that he worked on a thing called not Solar Warden, but like Stellar Warden. And it was a constellation, three satellites, two in equatorial orbit, right? One was an automatic. It was a automated hunter-killer. It means that it flew around. This guy was an aerospace engineer at a government contractor, worked down in Palmdale, built this thing before, you know, Ronald Reagan ever set foot in office. He was saying that Jimmy Carter was in office, and he's building SDI, you know? And he could tell you very definitively and very detailedly how he built it. So
that's
our whole space program.
Huh? I said, that's information overload.
It blows your mind, you know. I mean, I can tell you about the different, you know, satellites we have in orbit, and, you know, and I know, I knew a guy who was in the Soviet space program, not Russian, Soviet. And he, you know, he would, we worked together here. You know, he had come to America and left his Soviet past behind. And he was, you know, he'd sit in the lunchroom and he'd sit there telling you if you asked him, but yeah, we had SDI, sure. We targeted our laser cannons at your laser cannons. Your laser cannons targeted our laser cannons. You know, and it was all just a distraction. But he would tell you point blank. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, he worked on this stuff. This was not a guy that would lie. And this is not third-hand information. I mean, he literally worked on the telemetry systems of these satellites. So, you know, what we understand about space and what's going on up there is a complete distraction. It's not real.
Now, I totally agree with you there. Now, I wanted to ask you about what's your opinion on Planet X? And not only Planet X, but the alleged situation that's going to happen in September. And do you think that's the reason with the? Yeah, do you think that's the reason for the Jade Helm stuff that's going on and everything? That's about a 6-part question, so just bear with me.
Well, you know, since I was a kid, there have always been a lot of astronomers and physicists have believed that there's some sort of an object out beyond Pluto, you know, toward the Oort cloud, because they needed a large, heavy object out there to explain how the solar system functioned, the celestial mechanics, so to speak, of the solar system, that they needed a large gravity mass out there. So I'm not surprised. Whether it's on an erratic orbit that brings it past the Earth, I don't know. You know, different people have different theories, right, for the whole catastrophism thing. You know, if you talk to Paul LaViolette, he'll tell you that it's gravity superwaves that are shot out of the center of the galaxy, right? But what I do know is that I was taught in school, even in college, that there needed to be some sort of a heavy mass object sitting out toward the Oort cloud. I mean, not horrendously huge. I mean, it could be like Pluto, Neptune, whatever, because Pluto's now a dwarf planet. But it could be like Pluto. It's sitting out there. But there has to be something sitting out toward the Oort cloud in order for the celestial mechanics to work. As far as September 23rd, you know, 23 is an interesting number. People claim that it haunts them. There are some people in the world that are haunted by the number 23. It's everywhere they go. It's everything they see. It's a real phenomenon. I know a guy who's haunted by 23. I've seen it. He stops and he goes, look, it's 23. I mean, he literally will show you. And it's the damnedest thing you've ever seen. I don't know. You know, I don't know. What I know is that something's coming. You can feel it. Everybody
I know.
Knows.
You can't. You can see with the mass flooding in South, especially in the West Virginia area, my dad said it rained for 17 days straight. And I remember last summer it was raining. Not only that, but the sinkholes. And if you noticed, in the last three or 4 years, it's been the years of the sinkhole.
Oh, I know. The weather's gone nuts. There's huge methane
holes. The pole shifts, too. The pole shifts going crazy. You know, and that's but you can really tell these, like, devastating weather, and not even counting Harp and all the other stuff, but
well,
with that manipulation,
you know,
and...
Well, I knew a guy who shot a video, right, and it shows the craziest thing you've seen. It's like a tube of light shooting between clouds. It's nuts. It's like a lens of light shooting light through clouds. It's crazy. But you know what the thing is about HARP and geoengineering and chemtrails and all that stuff is that at this point, they're trying to use that stuff to maintain control over the climate, right? Originally, I think they used that stuff to try to control the deterioration of the climate. Because, look, I don't care if you think it's man-made or it's made by nature. It doesn't matter anymore. The weather's nuts. I've lived where I live my whole life, and I've never seen a drought this long. You know, I've never seen weather like this in my whole 40 years of existence, right? So maybe it's a cycle. Maybe it's we did it. Who cares? What I do care about is that they're trying to do something about it. And that's what geoengineering is. They've enforced global dimming. They're dumping chemtrails, right? They're trying to cool the surface of the Earth. They're trying to change the reflectivity of the Earth to force more light out into space. But when you do things like that, right, there are consequences. For example, it's like you look at your car, you know, and your engine's all jacked up, right? And you know that you can bang your starter's locking, right? You know you can hit it with a hammer, and if you hit it enough times, you know that it'll loosen up and you'll be able to start the car.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure. But the problem is that doesn't really fix the problem, because when you're hitting it, you're denting it.
Yeah, so it just makes the problem worse for a later day.
Yes, you're kicking the can down the road. And I think that's what they did. I think starting back in the late 50s, they started doing this stuff. I mean, there are patent filings about geoengineering, cloud seeding, weather manipulation that go back to the 50s. You know, it may even go back further than that. I mean, Guy McPherson talks about it starting in the 30s, right? But
yeah.
And they knew that it would do damage. But the idea was that we're going to do this for a little while. We're going to stabilize it, and then we'll deal with the damage, right? This is a common human characteristic. We all do it, right? I'm going to bang on the I literally pounded on my starter at a gas station with a hammer trying to get it to start, right? We've all done this before, and we think, oh, yeah, we'll get to it later, and we never do. I think that's where we are now, and I think that we've passed the point of no return. We're trying to control this thing. So when they're firing off HAARP and they're running the chemtrail operations and they're doing other things for geoengineering, you know, manipulating, you know, water currents and air flows and other things, they're getting more and more desperate. That's why you see more and more chemtrails now. That's why and think about it for a minute. If you go outside, it's a little darker than it used to be. And it really is. It's not a joke, right? In fact, to tell you how bad it is, do you know the singer Prince?
I'm familiar of the movie Purple Rain. Who isn't?
Okay. Well, Prince, who's a hell of a guitarist, Prince went on a show on BET. Yeah, he went on a show on BET and was saying, you know, when I was a kid, there were no contrails. He's like, I remember it clear as day. And he's like, and because he's pretty much lived in Minneapolis like his whole life, right? And he said that every year, more and more contrails, every year. And then he said, and then the chemtrails started. And then they got really thick. And then they blanketed the sky. He's like, now I go outside and it's just chemtrails everywhere. That's Prince.
Yeah, it looks like, you know how, like, you see people putting patterns in the lawn,
right?
Like that's how it looks in the sky. It looks like a flipping checkerboard.
Yeah, but you know what though? You know what I think is that I think that the insidious part of this is that nobody is. You know, occasionally some of you are, yeah, I'm a chemtrail pilot, but it never turns out that you can prove who they are, right?
Yeah.
Or they'll be like,
exactly.
Yeah. Or they'll be like, yeah, I got some information. There's a chemtrail fleet. But you can never verify anything they ever say, right? I think the truth is that the chemtrail fleet that you've seen is not a fleet. It's just commercial airliners that have been retrofitted to dump this stuff. And I think they're mixing it in the fuel because it's something that happens around the world. So you're talking about global coordination. So I think what they do is an ABC kind of thing where they say, okay, today A is getting the additive, B and C or not, or tomorrow B and C and getting an A is not, or some combination. Because you can see two airplanes flying side by side, that one has a contrail, one does not. They're flying at around the same altitude, meaning the same coldness is what you're really after, right? One has it, one does not. And that's probably because one fueled in Tokyo and one fueled, you know, in Hong Kong. So I think that's how they're doing it. But it's a global thing. I think they're secretly putting the additive in everywhere that causes the chemtrails to occur.
I definitely think there's an agenda of a depopulation going on. Slowly, though, it's a slowly depopulation. Even with we live in 2015. I'm a reasonable man. I think a person should do whatever they want. But the way things, you know, if I just think it's a whole. There's a lot of things going on, especially right now. It's taken a lot of just, there's divide. There's just so much stuff. I mean, I can't even, like, just say it in, like, two words, you know? I could talk about it all day, but there's just so much craziness that's going on in the world today, and it's just like a ticking time bomb, and I think it's ready to explode. But on top of that, we've got some other crazy stuff going on. So it's just like, at what angle do you want to get punched in the face?
Well, so the what you have observed is true. You know, science, it's been scientifically reported that the number of births in Western countries has dramatically dropped. You know, it used to be like 2.7 per couple. Now it's like 2.1. Basically, an entire person has disappeared statistically, and there are a few reasons, you know. One obviously is like birth control and family planning and all things like that. But also,
we see what's going on right there right now.
But if you look in the water, right, in most, at least in the United States, in most municipalities, if you look in the water, it's like a cocktail. There's a lot of estrogen hormones in there that are coming from either, you know, they're either spiking it or we're peeing it out, for lack of a better term. But there's estrogen hormones in there. There's muscle relaxants. You know, you see the output of birth control pills like Orthonovum, Orthocept, these kinds of birth control pills. Those estrogens are in there. You know, you see the female estrogens in there from Premarin, which is used to offset menopause, right? You see Soma, which is a muscle relaxant. There's Valium.
Oh, yeah.
There's all these drugs that are in there that are basically keep you passive, keep you from being angry, you know, keep you docile. And you don't, it's a lot harder to get pregnant. I mean, people who want to get pregnant, there's a boom in fertility clinics, you know, because people just can't get pregnant.
Well, then also you see now, too, you see the expose on the Planned Parenthood and the lady eating her salad and drinking her wine, talking about selling aborted fetuses and getting them out and everything. You know what I think about that? I think it's some kind of aging thing. And I think it's some kind of a cult thing, too, because I think that you could use something like that in some kind of rituals. I mean, I know I'm going fucking totally crazy with it, but
you know what I mean, though. You know what's funny is that, you know, we live in a world where, you know, we hear a lot about American exceptionalism, that America is amazing and we're the best country on the earth. You know what? I'm an American, and we are amazing. We've done some amazing things, invented airplanes and fiber optic cables, a whole bunch of other stuff. We invented the mouse, the personal computer, you know. But you know, our leaders from the founding fathers till today, you know, there's a deep streak of occultism. I mean, you know, everybody thinks of Benjamin Franklin out there with his, you know, his kite and the key and discovering electricity. That's great when he was here. When he went to England, that he spent most of the Revolutionary War in England, you know, he was having satanic sex orgies with the Hellfire Club, right?
Hellfire Club, oh yeah. And then they found a bunch of kids allegedly buried in his, but you know, I always say this, I don't trust no bastard with wooden teeth.
but there's this whole country. There's a whole subversive history that people don't talk about, and you can't just flick on Fox News and have them tell you, right? This stuff's real, but you have to seek it out, and hopefully a few of your listeners will go seek it out and go, gee, I wonder who really found in my country. You'll be very surprised.
Now, I know just as much as, and you probably know just as much as I do, when you find this knowledge, and you know, you sound like a guy much like myself that's had to find your own answers in life, and it just seems like when you find these answers, you've got to be very strong mentally to be able to prepare for what's really going on, you know, and a lot of people, even though they're awake, they're still half asleep in a lot of ways.
It's true, you know, because some of these things, you know, people don't, even in the conspiracy world and the alternative world, you know, the fringe world, just because you have access to the answer doesn't mean you want the answer. And a lot of times, you know, somebody may be content with, you know, looking into JFK, right? They'll spend their whole lives obsessed with the JFK thing. They don't want to know that in 2029 that there's a huge asteroid named after the Egyptian god of death that's going to go past our planet. And it's going to go, you know, inside the orbit of the ISS. I mean, NASA will tell you this. This is not made up. This is real, legit stuff, right? And if it hits a certain thing called the keyhole, which is about 100 kilometers across, if it hits that thing, then you can judge where it's going to hit the Earth based on where it is in the keyhole. And that'll happen approximately 7 years later. You don't want them to know that. You just want to sit down and read your you know, books about JFK and ignore the rest. So, yeah, it's
because
tough.
When you find out that stuff, it's a whole, it's just a, not only a mindfuck, but it's just like a, you've got a whole, like, totally base, you got to take everything that you've ever known or anything and throw it out the window.
It's like you're being
reborn again, like, not like reborn like Christianity, but like reborn, you're a child, like that innocence, and just finding out everything for yourself, and then walking around, and then what sucks too, Olaf, I want to mention this before we tap out. I'm only able to talk to this with a certain, you know, slight group of people, because the normal people will either deny or they get scared. And then they just don't want nothing to do, or they totally discredit you and want to laugh in your face and want to hurry up and just and cut it off quick, you know? I mean, I'm sure you've seen that a million times.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. You know, the one thing that I always tell people, I've had a few people come to me and go, hey, you know, there's all this conspiracy stuff. Tell me what I need to know. And I say, you know, do you want the blue pill? I mean, this is seriously, this, you know, let's do the Matrix analogy because everybody does, right? You want the red one or the blue one, because you can't unknow. Once you know, you cannot unknow. It's like watching a movie, right? This isn't true anymore, but back when they used to be on reels, and they were film, right? You could look in the upper right hand corner, about every, I think it's like 45 minutes, and you'd see a circle there, and that circle told the projectionist to start the second reel running. Right, so that he could transition off. Once you know it's there, man.
Oh, yeah, like the Fight Club. Yeah, the Fight Club analogy.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about there.
Right.
That's very true.
Yeah, you can't unknow it. For me personally, you know, I know this stuff. I personally try to... have some humor about it. I try to not take it too seriously.
Yeah, of course.
Even though I do, because, you know, if you talk about it with some, you know, with some freedom, right, then, you know, it's easier, right? It's easier to talk about. You know, I don't want to get depressed and think that there's nothing I can do. I always think to myself, you know, there's always something that I can do. Maybe I can't stop it. Maybe I can't postpone it. But when it comes, I'll be ready for it. You know, and I'll give it my damnedest. So for me, the thinking about preparing for it is what I do to deal with it. You know.
Well, that's you know, that's perfect. And we couldn't leave the episode on that better note. And hey, Olaf, I appreciate it, man, and I appreciate your contributions. I got to bring you back on the show, and I want to definitely contribute to some of to your newsletter and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, if you have an article or if you have a, you know, if you know anybody who has articles, send them over. We got Mysterious
awesome.
Magazine. We talked about the weird and unusual, weird hauntings, and, you know, strange cryptids and all that kind of stuff. And then we got Steam Shovel. Steam Shovel is a very famous, very hardcore conspiracy magazine. And I'm working with a guy named Tim Beckley to do something called UFO Retro, which is going to be a retro magazine that has, you know, UFO articles from the 50s, 60s, and the 70s. So, yeah, if you got something, send it over. I always welcome all contributions. Everybody's a good writer.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Olaf. And
thank
you. Have a great
night. Hey, you too.
No problem. Anytime, my friend. Good night.
All right.
What a great guest. I want to thank Olaf for coming on and thank all my listeners. And please join me again on Strange Surroundings of the Universe.